The body jolted, precisely the way people do in the twilight between wakefulness and sleep, when they suddenly feel like they are falling. Its eyelids fluttered and twitched and flew open. Eyes darted momentarily, seemingly confused, and then fixed on Matson, who leaned in and grinned.
"Hello, Boutin," Matson said. "Bet you're surprised to see me."
The body strained to move its head closer to Matson, as if to say something. Matson leaned in obligingly. The body screamed. General Szilard found Matson in the head, down the hall from the decanting lab, relieving himself.
"How's the ear?" Szilard asked.
"What kind of goddamn question is that, Zai?" Matson said, still facing the wall.
"You get a screaming earful from a babbling idiot and tell me how it feels."
"He's not a babbling idiot," Szilard said. "He woke up a newborn Special Forces soldier with his brain pal switched off. He didn't have any sense of himself. He did what any newborn would do. What did you expect?"
"I expected Charles fucking Boutin," Matson said, and shook.
"That's why we bred that little fucker in the creche, if you'll recall."
"You knew it might not work," Szilard said.
"I told you. Your people told you."
"Thanks for the recap, Sy," Matson said.
He zipped and moved over to the sink.
"This little adventure has just been one big goddamn waste of time."
"He still might be useful," Szilard said. "Maybe the consciousness needs time to settle."
"Robinson Wilson said his consciousness would be there as soon as he woke up," Matson said.
He waved his hands under the faucet.
"Goddamn automatic faucet,"
he said, and finally covered the sensor completely with his hand. The water kicked on.
"This is the first time anyone's done something like this," Szilard said. "Maybe Robbins and Wilson were wrong."
Matson barked out a short laugh.
"Those two were wrong, Sy. No maybes about it. Just not in the way you suggest. Besides, are your people going to babysit a full-grown man-sized infant while you're waiting for his consciousness to settle? I'd be guessing no, and I'm sure as hell not going to do it. Wasted too much time on this as it is."
Matson finished washing his hands and looked around for the towel dispenser. Szilard pointed to the far wall.
"Dispenser is out," he said.
"Well, of course it is," Matson said.
"Humanity can build soldiers from the DNA up, but it can't stock a head with fucking paper towels."
He shook his hands violently and then wiped the excess moisture on his pants.
"Leaving the issue of paper towels to the side," Szilard said, "does this mean you're relinquishing the soldier to me? If you are, I'm going to have his brain pal turned on and get him into a training platoon as soon as possible."
"You in a rush?" Matson said.
"He's a fully developed Special Forces soldier," Szilard said. "While I wouldn't say I am in a rush, you know as well as I do what the turnover rate for Special Forces is. We always need more. And let's just say I have faith that this particular soldier may yet turn out to be useful."
"Such optimism," Matson said.
Szilard smiled.
"Do you know how Special Forces soldiers are named, General?" Szilard asked.
"You're named after scientists and artists," Matson said.
"Scientists and philosophers," Szilard said. "Last names, anyway. The first names are just random common names. I'm named after Leo Szilard. He was one of the scientists who helped to build the first atomic bomb, a fact that he would later come to regret."
"I know who Leo Szilard was, Zai,"
Matson said.
"I didn't mean to imply you didn't, General," Szilard said.
"Although you never know with you real-born. You have funny gaps in your knowledge."
"We spend most of our later educational years trying to get laid," Matson said.
"It distracts most of us from stockpiling information about 20th-century scientists."
"Imagine that," Szilard said, mildly, and then continued on his train of thought.
Aside from his scientific talents, Szilard was also good at predicting things. He predicted both of Earth's world wars in the 20th century and other major events. It made him jumpy. He made it a point to live in hotels and always have a packed bag ready, just in case.
"Fascinating," Matson said.
"What's your point?" I don't pretend to be related to Leo Szilard in any way, Szilard said. I was just assigned his name, but I think I share his talent for predicting things, especially when it comes to wars. I think this war we've got coming is going to get very bad indeed. That's not just speculation. We've been gathering intelligence now that my people know what to look for, and you don't have to be in possession of intelligence to know that humanity going up against three different races makes for bad odds for us. Szilard motioned his head in the direction of the lab. This soldier may not have Bhutan's memories, but he's still got Bhutan in him, in his genes. I think it'll make a difference, and we're going to need all the help we can get. Call him my packed bag.
You want him because of a hunch? Matson said.
Among other things, Szilard said.
Sometimes it really shows that you're a teenager, Zai, Matson said.
Do you release this soldier to me, General? Szilard asked. Matson waved dismissively.
He's yours, General, he said. Enjoy. At least I won't have to worry about this one turning traitor.
Thank you, Szilard said.
And what are you going to do with your new toy? Matson asked.
For starters, Szilard said, I think we'll give him a name.
Chapter 4 He came into the world, like most newborns do, screaming. The world around him was formless chaos. Something was close to him and making noises at him when the world showed up. It frightened him. Suddenly it went away, leaking loud noises as it went. He cried. He tried to move his body, but could not. He cried some more. Another form approached. Based on his only previous experience, he yelled in fear and tried to get away. The form made noise and movement. Clarity. It was as if corrective lenses had been placed on his consciousness. The world snapped into place. Everything remained unfamiliar, but everything also seemed to make sense. He knew that even though he couldn't identify or name anything he saw, it all had names and identities. Some portion of his mind surged into life, itching to label it all, but could not. The entire universe was on the tip of his tongue. Can you perceive this? The form, the person in front of him asked. And he could. He could hear the question, but he knew that no sound had been made. The question had been beamed directly into his brain. He didn't know how he knew this, or how it was done. He also didn't know how to respond. He opened his mouth to reply. Don't, the person in front of him said. Try sending me your reply instead. It's faster than speaking. It's what we all do. Here's how. Inside his head, instructions appeared, and more than instructions, an awareness that suggested that anything he didn't understand would be defined, explained, and placed into context. Even as he thought this, he felt the instructions he had been sent expand, individual concepts and ideas branching off into pathways, searching for their own meanings in order to give him a framework he could use. Presently, it coalesced into one big idea, a gestalt that allowed him to respond. He felt the urge to respond to the person in front of him grow. His mind, sensing this, offered up a series of possible responses. Each unpacked itself as the instructions had, offering up understanding and context as well as a suitable response. All of this took slightly under 5 seconds.
I perceive you, he said, finally.
Excellent, the person in front of him said.
I am Judy Curie.
Hello, Judy, he said. After his brain unpacked for him the concepts of names and also the protocols for responding to those who offer their names as identification, he tried to give his name, but came up blank. He was suddenly confused.
Curie smiled at him. Having a hard time remembering your name? She asked.
Yes, he said. That's because you don't have one yet, Curie said. Would you like to know what your name is?
Please, he said. You are Jared Dirac, Curie said.
Jared sensed the name unpack in his brain. Jared, a biblical name. The definition of biblical unpacked, leading him to the definition of book and to the Bible, which he did not read, as he sensed the reading and subsequent unpacking thereof would take more than a few seconds. Son of Mahalalel, and the father of Enoch. Also the leader of the Jaredites in the Book of Mormon, another book left unpacked. Definition? The descendant. Dirac had a number of definitions, most derived from the name of Paul Dirac, a scientist. Jared had previously unpacked the meaning of names and the implications of naming conventions. He turned to Curie.
I am a descendant of Paul Dirac, he asked.
No, Curie said.
Your name was randomly selected from a pool of names.
But my first name means descendant, Jared said. And last names are family names.
Even among real-born, first names usually don't mean anything, Curie said. And among us, last names don't either. Don't read too much into your names, Jared.
Jared thought about this for a few moments, letting these ideas unpack themselves. One concept, real-born, refused to unpack itself. Jared noted it for further exploration, but left it alone for now.
I am confused, he said eventually.
Curie smiled.
You will be confused a lot to begin with, she said.
Help me be less confused, Jared said.
I will, Curie said, but not for too long. You have been born out of sequence, Jared. Your training mates already have a 2-day start on you. You must integrate with them as soon as possible. Otherwise, you may experience a delay from which you may never recover. I will tell you what I can while I take you to your training mates. They will fill in the rest. Now, let's get you out of that creche. Let's see if you can walk as well as think.
The concept of walk unpacked itself as the restraints holding Jared in the creche removed themselves. Jared braced himself and pushed forward, out of the creche. His foot landed on the floor.
One small step for man, Curie said.
Jared was surprised that the unpacking inherent in that phrase was substantial.
First order of business, Curie said as she and Jared walked through Phoenix Station. You think you're thinking, but you're not.
Jared's first impulse was to say, I don't understand, but he held back, intuiting for the first time that this was likely to be his response to most things in the near future.
Please explain, he said instead. You are newly born, Curie said. Your brain, your actual brain, is entirely empty of knowledge and experience. In its place, a computer inside your head known as a brain pal is feeding you knowledge and information. Everything you think you understand is being processed by your brain pal and fed back to you in a way you can grasp. It is also the thing that is offering you suggestions on how to respond to things. Mind the crowd.
Curie weaved to avoid a clot of CDF soldiers in the middle of the walkway. Jared weaved with her.
But I feel like I almost know so much, Jared said.
Like I knew it once, but now I don't.
Before you are born, the brain pal conditions your brain, Curie said. It helps set down neural pathways common in all humans and prepares your brain for rapid learning and processing of information. That's why it feels like you know things already, because your brain has been prepared to learn it. For the first month of your life, everything feels like déjà vu. Then you learn it, it gets stored in your actual brain, and you stop using your brain pal like a crutch. Because of the way we are, we can gather information and process it, and learn it, several times faster than real-born.
Jared stopped, partly to let his mind unpack everything Curie had just said to him, but partly because of something else. Curie, sensing he had stopped, stopped as well.
What?
She said.
That's the second time you've used that word, real-born. I can't find out what that means.
It's not something they put in your brain, pal, Curie said. She began walking again and motioned at the other soldiers on the walkway.
Real-born is them. There are people who are born as babies and have to develop over a very long period of time, years. One of them, who is 16 years old, might not know as much as you do now, and you've been alive for about 16 minutes. It's really an inefficient way to do things, but it's the way it's done naturally, and they think that means it's a good thing.
You don't? Jared asked.
I don't think it's good or bad, aside from being inefficient, Curie said. I'm just as alive as they are. Real born is a misnomer. We're really born, too. Born, live, die. It's the same.
So we're just like them, Jared said.
Curie glanced back. No, she said. Not just like them. We're designed to be better physically and mentally. We move faster. We think faster. We even talk faster than they do. The first time you talk to a real-born, it will seem like they're moving at half speed. See? Watch. Curie stopped, appeared to look confused, and then tapped the shoulder of a soldier who was walking by.